Hey, you're listening to the Fanboy Strike Back Weekly Review Podcast, Whoa! Episode 5. I'm David.
Eric.
And we are the Fanboys that Strike Back. Every week we read the comics that came out. We choose the one that we thought was the best, and then we write a review of it on our site, fanboystrikeback.com. And then we come here after that every week, and we discuss that book and all the others. We discuss these books in all their entirety, so there are spoilers in this podcast. If you would like to avoid these spoilers, then just go ahead and pause the podcast and come back to us later. Also, this week, we are going to be discussing our top 5 comic stories that we would like to see. And on that note, I'm going to throw it over to you, Eric. And you have the pick of the week this week.
This book, Sinestro Corps Special Number 1, was my book of the week. And this book just blew me away this week. It shocked me. I was not expecting this.
It was a good book.
I'm really going to give it up for Jeff Johns. You know, he's always been good, but I think he's really been honing his talent lately.
Right.
And this was just amazing. And this story feels so much bigger than any Green Lantern story. And basically the premise is, over the past couple months, Sinestro's been building an army of his own with Fordian rings, like the one that he's always had.
Right.
And it's not really a revenge tale of Sinestro versus the Green Lanterns. It's more of his view of trying to set things right, which what he views is the universe is now in chaos and it needs order. And he has a very totalitarian kind of fascist view of that. And so that's what he's trying to implement, and he's building an army to do that. Now, the big surprises in this book came in the reveal of where he's getting all this power from and what his overall plans are for taking the Green Lantern Corps, for neutralizing them, really, for taking up their biggest weapon right now. And, oh my god, Ethan Van Sciver's work, his artwork on this book was just incredible.
He's definitely stepping it up.
Yeah, I talked to you earlier, and it was just, like, amazing how this book actually looked like it was glowing, like, as you look at it. I mean, the pages are just incredibly plain with light and dark.
Right.
And, it was incredible. Some of my favorite moments, the first attack against the Corps was really good. A lot of this book goes into Kyle's backstory a little bit, and it's showing where, you know, the things that he's gone through as a Green Lantern and what state of mind that's put him in at this point in his life, which he's been through a lot of tragedy, and he's really worn down. And so Sinestro basically launches this attack against him, since he is the torchbearer. He is the Green Lantern's greatest warrior at this point. He's the secret weapon.
Right, and then we find out that just like there's an entity for Parallax and Fear, that Kyle, being the torchbearer for the Corps, he had the entity of Will, and so that's why he's been so important. And we see that Sinestro takes that out of him and captures that entity, and then he puts the Parallax entity into Kyle.
Yeah, so basically he infects Kyle, and Kyle is now taken over by Parallax. But really,
with his modified first costume, which was awesome,
which was really cool design. But I mean, it was just some heartbreaking, like, mental breakdown of the character before that happens. Like he actively fights it, but Sinestro has this kind of great way of getting inside Kyle's head and shows that even though he didn't think that Kyle's mother's death was related to him being Green Lantern, we find out that Sinestro had actually planted this virus inside of Kyle's mother, and that's how she died.
Yeah, that was pretty rough.
And it was heartbreaking.
But it's cool to see Kyle actually getting props, because you know that he is the torchbearer, that he is Ion, and you see, like, actually, you actually see some respect from Sinestro, because Sinestro chooses Kyle to be, like, you know, the vessel for Parallax. So it's nice to see, you know, Kyle's been in limbo ever since Hal Jordan came back, so it's nice to see that they're giving him some attention.
Right, and I do think Sinestro, there is a bit of a revenge aspect to Sinestro, just in regards to Kyle, because ever since Sinestro came back, he's been wanting to take out Kyle, and ever since Rebirth.
Yeah.
And so some other great moments of this book, Superboy Prime being broken out of his prison, and the sheer, like we saw in Infinite Crisis, the sheer amount of Green Lanterns that die whenever Superboy Prime is around, it's disturbing. And he actually, like, he's a character that kind of scares me now. Like, it was exciting to see that.
He's really imbalanced.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of people say, like, they're tired of that effect. They're tired of just seeing, like, all of a sudden Green Lanterns die and then the rings seeking out, you know, new lanterns. But I could never get tired of seeing that.
No,
I think that's one of the coolest scenes.
It's great. And it actually makes me think, like, he's a viable threat, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And so what do we think about the various last page, the surprise ending?
The big reveal at the end, I loved it. What we find out basically is... The source of Sinestro's core and where all this is going is the Anti-Monitor from Crisis on Infinite Earths is back, and he is this herald basically for Sinestro and Parallax and Superboy Prime, and that my jaw dropped at that point.
You have the Anti-Monitor, Superboy Prime, the Cyborg Superman, the Manhunters, Kyle Rayner as Parallax, and Sinestro, and the Sinestro core.
Yeah, I mean, this is big, and this just feels like, it feels more like a Crisis book than it does a Green Lantern book.
That's a big threat, man.
Yeah, so I am really excited about this story now. I was kind of lukewarm about it. I thought it was going to be interesting, but I had no idea it was going to be this good.
Yeah, neither did I. And it was like I was telling you earlier, I think the best thing about this book is that, like you were saying with Johns, it's like, you know, Johns has really found this place, especially with the Green Lantern books, and, you know, the whole concept of Green Lantern, like some other superheroes, is really silly, you know, someone just exerting their will, but he's really, you know, gone into the Green Lantern lore, and he's really fleshed it out, and you see, you know, he's linking it to their emotions or the trait, like, you have the willpower, and you have fear, and with the Star Sapphires, you know, we saw that there's love, and there's this really interesting part in all this where Ganthet, who was once the lone guardian, and one of the other guardians, they're talking about this prophecy, which says that there's going to be a battle between the light and the dark, and the true power of the ring will be revealed. So I'm really interested to see what that's all about, and this shocked everyone, I think. I don't think anyone knew, like, how good this book was going to be.
Yeah. One thing about Geoff Johns is when he gets on a title and he really devotes time to it, I mean, the greatest thing is he really knows all the characters in that book. He goes back and he does his homework, and it feels like he's been reading these comics forever, which he, you know, he might have been growing up on these ones. I don't know what he read when he was younger. But, I mean, right. We saw it on Teen Titans, we saw it on JSA, and we're seeing it in Green Lantern, where he really pulls the past back into the present, and not in a bad way, like the way we're being forced the Silver Age down our throats and like Brad Meltzer. Right. Like this.
It's like, but he's doing the opposite. He's kind of taking the Silver Age and he's making it more modern. He's making sense of it.
Yeah. And he's just, he's basically just taking parts and you're right, making sense of it, but he's not going back to it either. He's using that as a springboard to tell new stories, which right. is fantastic. I wish more books were like this.
Yeah, this should be like the benchmark of what a comic book should be. This was amazing.
Yeah. So another big event this week.
Yes, X-Men number 200 came out. The big X-Men summer event kicks off here. There wasn't too much in the actual issue. I haven't been a huge fan of Mike Carey's X-Men. You have Rogue, who has absorbed like 8 billion minds, and she's going kind of crazy. You have the Marauders that are back in this issue, and they've kind of been playing up that whole aspect, and that was kind of cool. But the big surprise of this ending is that Mystique, who is Rogue's foster mother at one point, actually shoots Rogue through the chest at the very end of this issue. So, I don't know. I've always been lukewarm on Mike Carey's run. It's okay. It's not bad. You know, I'm happy paying for it, and I'm interested to see where it's going to go, but the real thing about this issue was we have the very first part of the endangered species storyline, which we talked a little bit about last week. And like I said, they were talking about how it might see a dark turn for Hank McCoy, the Beast, and you saw it in this very first part, because you see Beast talking to someone, you're not sure who, about trying to find a cure for M-Day when all the mutants were decimated. And you find out that he talked to Reed Richards, Hank Pym, Tony Stark, and, you know, all these great minds of the Marvel Universe, and he was trying to figure out a cure, and he didn't figure out anything. But on the way, he stumbled across important information about genetics and mutants as a whole. And so you see him offering up the information that he got in return for a help for finding a cure for M-Day. And at the very end, you see that who he's talking to is all supervillains. There's Doctor Doom, I think Mojo's in there, the High Evolutionary, Mr. Sinister. So, it kind of made me feel really bad, because Hank's like the heart of the X-Men. Hank's the one who's always going to do right. And so it was kind of rough watching that, but I'm very glad that they're doing something interesting with him, because he is that heart and that stone of the X-Men, but he's also like, he's always ignored. So I thought it was great. And this was your first issue that you ever bought, wasn't it, of X-Men?
This is my first, yeah, it's the first actual jumping into a story arc. And I gotta say, it was good. It was good, but I was lost a lot of the way through it. Like, I was putting together pieces, but it feels like there's a lot of history.
Yeah, this is, I mean, the whole endangered species.
You know, it's hard to jump into any X-Men book with just being a little foggy. But, I mean, I understood what was going on, and it was still a good story. I thought the art was really great in both sections of it, but it was just really hard. This was not a great jumping on point, I think.
No, this was actually a horrible jump. Like, the endangered species thing was good. I mean, you got all of that, but Mike Carey's run, that's a horrible jumping off a point. That's why I don't think they should have put this first part in the book, but, I mean, it's issue 200, so of course they're going to.
But yeah, but I did really enjoy the endangered species.
So yeah, I think it should be good. What else do you want to talk about, Eric? You want to tell the people a little bit about Countdown?
No. Countdown, Teen Titans, That's pretty much what I'm going to say to it.
I'm not sure if this was just like, I read Sinestro Corps first, and then I read X-Men, and, you know, I'm not sure if all the other books were crappy, or it's just because those two books were just, you know, so good that it made everything else look crappy, but...
No. And the hard part is it for me is Adam Beechin, who's writing Teen Titans, he's great on everything else, but I think he's having to write the Amazon's Attack tie-ins. I think they've picked the Titans books to do that. And it's unfortunate, because I think that's weighing down a lot of his better storytelling elements.
Yeah, because all you saw for this issue of Titans was just Cassie acting like an emotional, like an overly, overly emotional little teenage girl.
Yeah, and there's just no justification for her acting that poorly. She'd be upset, and I could see her acting slightly irrationally, but she's been through so much at this point. This is more like what her character might have done a long time ago when they first introduced her, but she's been through enough now to where she should understand, like, this is not the best course of action.
Right.
So that was just, it didn't feel right. It didn't feel in character. And I understand what they're trying to do, and there's going to be, you know, Cassie and Supergirl in the Amazon's Attack book, and it just, it's unfortunate that the Teen Titans book is being weighed down with all of that right now.
Yeah, I agree. The Teen Titans has not been good lately, so hopefully after this Amazon's Attack thing is over, it will go back up to speed. Alright, let's head into the top five.
Yeah, so
this is the top five stories that we would like to see.
My number five story would be, I want a good, back in the early 90s, there was Tim Drake's Robin. Before he had a solo series of his own, he had three miniseries, and the second one was basically Robin versus Joker, and it was great because he was still really new as being Robin, and there was still a lot of emotional fallout from Robin having killed Jason Todd, and then Tim Drake is going up against the Joker alone, when he's still pretty new at being Robin. Batman's out of town, and he has to do something. So that was a really good story. But ever since then, And they really set it up for there being a really big feud in between the two of them. And what I wanted...
Tim Drake and the Joker?
Right. Like, okay. The Joker specifically, like, said, you know, no one else touches him, he's mine. And what I really want is, even when there has been Robin and Joker stories, they haven't really focused on it, you know, on their past a whole lot. So I want another good Tim Drake versus Joker story. Like, and that's not asking a whole lot. Like, that's pretty generic.
Well, you think that there would have been tons by now, but...
Yeah, they've just mentioned it offhand, like...
But not going back to that actual...
No, and
their past history.
There was that great issue of Detective a couple months back where Joker kidnaps Robin. But it seemed like they had no history together at all. And so I was just like, you know, come on. These two have been at each other's throats for quite a while now. So I want a good hardcore Tim Drake versus the Joker story. Like, a follow-up. Because Tim's a lot more skilled now than he was back then.
Right.
So, you know, I might just be asking for something that might not be that exciting because, of course, he could take out the Joker now, but I think there'd be some really good mind games that could go on there.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, he might be able to take out the Joker, but that doesn't make the Joker any less crazy.
No, or any less of a threat.
Definitely. My number five is that I want to see the return of Jean Grey.
What? Well, you will. I'm sure it'll happen.
Well, I'm sure, I don't know, it's going to happen eventually, but I'm not a huge fan of Grant Morrison's run on X-Men, as we know. I thought it was very innovative for certain parts, but I think the one thing that I really hated is that he made Jean the Phoenix again, and then he killed Jean again. I had a lot of issues with Scott cheating on Jean and being with Emma. That's, you know, that's one thing. Like, I understand them wanting Scott and Jean to maybe be apart, and I think the whole Scott and Emma thing now is fine, but I think Jean Grey is too great of a character to kill, especially to kill in the same way that she's been killed before. So a lot of people will definitely not agree with me on that one, but I'm a big fan of Jean Grey. I'm sure I'll see her again. I don't think it's going to be anytime soon, but that's what I'd like to see. So you're number four.
My number four, this is something that I'm actually pretty certain is going to happen soon. I'm really excited to see it, and I want to see it ever since I started reading Brubaker's Captain America trades, is I want to see more Bucky, and I want to see Bucky as Captain America.
Ooh, that's a good one. And I have to support that one.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's going to be happening within the next couple months, and I cannot wait. I am chomping at the bit to see more of that. And Bucky is such a great character. Especially
it's amazing.
As the Winter Soldier. Yeah, who would have thought that would have ever happened?
I know. On paper, that is such a horrible, horrible idea, but it's brilliant.
The thing is, like, what's great about him, he seems like he deals with everything more, you know, he's just a little unhinged, you know, he's not quite all there, and, you know, he's been through quite a bit, and he doesn't feel that he has any kind of moral ambiguity, he just feels like he's doing what needs to be done.
Right.
But, and he's an assassin, he's a soldier, you know, killing comes is no problem for him, so I think that'd be...
And I love the personal, like, pride that he's kind of taking with the fact that, like, Steve was his best friend, who was his mentor, and, like, to him, he's just like, if anyone's going to do that, it's going to be me. He's like, you know, I'm not going to let anyone disgrace that name, you know, especially not Tony Stark, I'm going to do that. I love that whole aspect of it.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Well, that was a good choice. Very nice. My number four is that back in the 90s, Peter and Mary Jane had a baby, and Norman Osborn stole that baby, and Marvel totally forgot about it. So I would like to see that baby.
What's going on with that baby?
I know. This was a point where Marvel really started to regret marrying off Peter and Mary Jane, and... There's still, right now, there's still a lot of speculation on what's going to happen. Are they going to kill off Mary Jane? You know, I think it's great. I think they need to take that, and I think they need to run with it and go the opposite direction. Like, he is married. They should have probably had a kid already by now. You know, let him have that. You know, we're lucky enough to have Ultimate Spider-Man, so we're always going to have Peter Parker as a teenager. You know, Bendis has already said, like, Peter in Ultimate Spider-Man, he's probably never going to leave high school. And that's great, because that's exactly what that should be. But the Marvel Universe Peter Parker, he's older now. You know, let him be married, and I think it would be such a great story to see what happened with this baby. So, I would like to see it. I don't think I'm going to see that anytime soon at all, but...
Yeah.
Man can hope.
Okay.
All right, what's your number three?
My number three is, again, like you said, going back to the 90s. During the whole Batman Nightfall, Night's End storyline, after that all wrapped up, Bruce Wayne came back and he reclaimed the mantle of the Bat from Ezreal. And he did it because he had to, because he had no choice. But afterwards, he wanted to still take some time off and kind of collect his thoughts and find out where, you know, does he really want to come back as being Batman? And basically, he leaves Gotham and he goes on a journey. And in the meantime, he chose Dick Grayson to fill in as Batman for him. And then, you know, several months later, he came back and was Batman again. We have never been given that story of what Bruce did while he was away for those several months. What I want is to basically see the definitive Bruce Wayne story. And I want it done kind of in the style of in Batman Begins, that whole first part of the movie when it was just Bruce Wayne. Like, yeah. I kind of want David Goyer to write it. Like
That's not a bad idea.
What, you know, just a Bruce Wayne story. And it might also be fun to throw in a few clips back to Gotham and to see Dick Grayson dealing with being Batman some more. Because it was a fun read, and I think, you know, by now people have mostly forgotten about it, so we can throw a little bit of that in there. But mainly I want to focus on Bruce just as Bruce Wayne, and, you know, whether or not he wants to come back as Batman, what will bring him back to that point, you know, because at this point he doesn't have to. So I think that would be a really rich storytelling area, and I'm really surprised we haven't been given it by now. And, basically I want it done the way the movie did it.
Not bad.
So, number three.
My number three is that I would like to see certain X-Men get control of their powers. And this actually is something that may be currently happening. What I have wanted to see for the longest time, ever since I became an X-Men fan, is I want to see Scott Summers being able to control his powers. And right now, in Astonishing, he has no powers. He doesn't even have access to his powers because of something that Emma Frost did to him when she was under the control of Cassandra Nova. But I think that, you know, there is a very fine line between the X-Men being mutants and being, you know, tragic cases because they can't control their powers. But you also have to remember that, you know, Xavier's school is a school where they're supposed to learn how to use their powers. And I would like to see, especially Scott, like, really step up. And I would like, kind of like you'd like to see just a solo Bruce Wayne story, I'd like to see, like, as cliche as it sounds, like, I'd like to see maybe, like, a soul-searching Cyclops go out and just go out for the pure point of trying to control his powers.
It'd be good.
The same thing with Rogue, which we're seeing Rogue at the opposite spectrum right now. You know, Rogue absorbed the powers of Miss Marvel, and for years, you totally forgot what Rogue's mutant power was. Because all she was doing was flying around, punching people with super strength, she was invulnerable.
She just seemed like, you know, Miss Marvel, basically, which I know exactly. That's basically for her powers, but that's really all she was.
Yeah, and you totally forgot the fact that, you know, Rogue's powers, and, you know, I'm so thinking this now because Eric and I are huge fans of the show Heroes, and you see someone like Peter Petrelli, and you're like, that is the coolest power. And that's basically what Rogue does. And she's been doing a lot more lately, especially in Mike Carey's run. That's what I have liked about it. But I would like to see her be able to control those powers, you know, and just, you know, take what she needs and then use it at once. And there was a great part in one of the issues of Mike Carey's run where she's surrounded by soldiers and Cyclops and Emma Frost are knocked out right beside her. So she touches Emma, she turns her fist to Diamond, and then she touches Scott. She shoots the Ruby Quartz beam into her fist, and it becomes a spectrum, and it hits all the soldiers. And I was like, that's exactly what Rogue should be all the time, because she's around the most powerful mutants in the world, and that's basically her power. So
yeah,
I'd like to see that.
She should be, really, I think she should be on the forefront as much as Cyclops or Wolverine are. There's really no reason why she shouldn't.
True. Alright, number two.
Number two. This might be argued by some that it already exists in some forms or another, but to me it doesn't, and I'm craving it. I want a definitive Superman story. And I, you know, we kind of got a definitive Superman story in Kingdom Come, which was a very Superman-centric story, but that was more of an older-aged Superman, and it was kind of one of his final stories, basically. What I would love to see is just, you know, some kind of defining story, the way, you know, like Long Halloween or Hush was to Batman. I want something like that for Superman. And I know they tried, and, you know, they had Brian Azzarello and Jim Lee do that one story.
Oh, gosh, don't talk about that.
And that was horrible. Like, I didn't know what was happening through the whole thing. And Superman for All Seasons, I think, comes really close by Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale. But
what do you think that the Death and the Return of Superman would be? Well, I think that should have led up to the definitive, because they're like, okay, he's come through all this. It's probably the best Superman story, and it's like a blank slate, and then they did nothing with him.
Right. He just came back, and basically he was back, and that was it. And right. I think they just kind of did that again with the 1 year later, where we had a lot of buildup, and then basically he just kind of willed his powers back into himself, and he was back. Now, I think a lot of stories we get from Superman, there are a lot of buildup and then not a whole lot of follow-through. And one of the best Superman stories I read recently was right during Infinite Crisis when they bombed Bloodhaven. And basically, it's written as an article written by Lois Lane, and it's not a new storytelling device in that book, but mm-hmm. it still worked really well. And it just basically, there wasn't a whole lot of dialogue and characters, but it was Superman going in, because he was one of the only people who could withstand the radiation, because basically the city was nuked. And so he right. goes in, and he's looking for survivors, and he's trying to put out fires and taking care of this disaster. And, you know, he comes out and he tries to comfort Nightwing, that was his city, basically, and it was destroyed. And he's having a hard time not being able to go in and save people, but, he couldn't, because he'd die. So it was just done really well, and there wasn't a whole lot of dialogue, but it was just, it made you feel like, this is why we need Superman. And it just left you with a really great feeling inside. And I want a multi-part story that does that in right. continuity, not an Elseworlds tale or anything like that.
Yeah, that's a hard one, though, because, I mean, I would love to see that, too. But I think Superman is just probably, like, the hardest character to write.
It is, and, I think a lot of people would argue that, you know, we might have already seen it, and that would just be people's differing opinions on what Superman's story currently is the best. But
I think you're right, though, because I, honestly, off the top of my head, I can't name a definitive Superman story. I wouldn't be able to think of one.
Yeah, Kingdom Come is about the closest I can get.
Yeah, you're probably right.
But, I think something in continuity would be good. So, what's your number?
Fair enough. My number two is kind of like your number four, maybe, with the Bruce Wayne thing.
Mm-hmm.
Only, I want to see Dick Grayson as Batman. And we've talked about this many times. That's like my number one complaint about the DC universe, is that Dick Grayson, like DC, the greatest weapon in DC's arsenal is their sense of legacy. Their sense that if one of the big three, if they can't hack it, they have plenty of people right there willing and ready to step up. And I think it says a lot when you have a character like Dick Grayson, and you see him like actually grow out of the role of Robin and grow into the role of Nightwing.
Yeah.
And
I agree.
I think he's grown out of the role of Nightwing. And I'm not, you know, I honestly think that Bruce Wayne should not be Batman for a while. And I mean for like a while, for like years. And I really think that you don't get rid of Bruce Wayne. I'm not sure if you want to make him the businessman. I'm not sure if you want to have him take like some kind of Oracle role or something. And I know that I'm never going to see this, but Dick Grayson is just so important to DC, and they don't use him. And I think that just as he should grow out of Nightwing, I think Tim Drake needs to kind of grow out of Robin. Maybe there shouldn't even be a Robin. Or I would absolutely love to see the Dick and Tim team. You know, I would love to see the Batman and Robin and be Dick and Tim. I think that would be so great. And I don't think I'll ever see it.
Yeah, well, I mean, that I love whenever they team up. But and we kind of got that with the Prodigal storyline in the 90s.
Right. But I think
I think
they just need to be something huge that needs to happen with Dick Grayson. I think he hasn't really, I think his role in DC has always been like, you know, the best sidekick or whatever, or the one that will always step up when he needs to. But, you know, maybe the big three needs to kind of go away, and there need to be others. Like, I think Dick Grayson is really up there.
Yeah.
And
if there's
I'd like to see something really big happen with it.
Yeah. Well, you've just hit on my number one, basically. I want Dick Grayson to take on a larger role in the DCU. When you have a character who it becomes common knowledge that he's slated for death soon, and the sheer outpouring of fan reaction, not just fan reaction, but creator reaction, too. I mean, from what I hear, there was a lot of people that walked into Dio's office saying, we can't do this. This is ridiculous. Right. That shows you just how strong the character is. And some people think he's redundant. He's not. And he has grown up and out. He's almost grown out of the role of Nightwing. You're right. Like, if this were the Kingdom Come world, like, he'd be putting on the Red Robin costume at this point. Or he'd be doing something, you know. And it's... What irritates me so much is, like, what's currently happening in the Outsiders book is that's one of the best books that he's written in. And he's in charge of a team. Dick's always been in charge of a team. Like, that's one of his roles, and it really shows his leadership capabilities. It shows him stepping up. Sometimes he gets a little dark when he has to, you know, kind of like Bruce. But it's really good. And what they're doing is they're taking him off the team and putting Bruce in charge of it. And that's just a slap in the face to, like... not only Nightwing fans, but to the character himself. Like, oh, you still can't cut it. You know, your dad has to come in and fix it for you. You know, I hate that.
Hands down, Dick Grayson should be leading the Justice
League. Yes, he should. Like, I'd love to see that story. Or, you know, some kind of story. If there's a big three, Dick is number four, basically. Like,
exactly.
And I think you're right. Like, I think he does need to step up. Even if Bruce stepped down, like, put Bruce in charge of Outsiders, fine. Put Dick on the Justice League. Because
exactly. You
know, something like that. He needs to be honored in a way. He is DC's secret weapon. And they just don't use him to his potential.
Especially after, I mean, you think that they'd wake up by now. Because, like you said, everyone went up in arms when they thought that he was going to die. DC got the wake-up call. They didn't kill him. But then they still haven't done anything with him since. At that point, there should have been, like, you know, the explanation point above their head saying, hey, we really need to, like... put a lot of attention towards this character.
Right, and his book has just gotten steadily worse since, it's gotten a little bit better, but it got so bad after that. And yeah. Tim Drake, I think he's good as Robin. That's his role, and he always kind of said, you know, he's going to be Robin for a while, and he's not going to go on.
He's not going to be Batman.
Yeah, or he doesn't want to be, but everything is kind of indicating he eventually will be because of all the tragedies and everything that he's gone through in his life.
Yeah.
But I agree. I love when they team up because it's really a brothers in arms type of feel to it. But yeah, I think
that's just like
I think they're like the definitive Dick Grayson role in the DC.
Yeah, and it's just one of the best books that came out this year that just I'm always gonna keep with me this year is the Nightwing Annual.
Yes, that was great.
That was a fantastic book, and that like just shows what a great character Dick Grayson is. And then I haven't seen anything since then.
Yeah,
and it's like, come on.
Not only, like, a great character, but such a rich history to explore, too. Like, with all the transitions he's gone through with every character that he's interacted with in the DCU. I mean, here's a guy who everyone respects and everyone knows. So, I mean, yeah, I think DC's dropping the ball on that character. So, that's my five.
All right. My number one is, I would like to see DC's All-Star line be what it's actually supposed to be, which is Marvel's Ultimate line.
Yeah, I wanted it to go away.
Okay, I understand that DC doesn't want to strictly just copy what Marvel's doing with the Ultimate line, but they should. Because, number one, DC needs the Ultimate line so much more than Marvel, because DC's continuity is a complete mess. And what they need, every time they have a crisis, the whole point of a crisis is because they want to start over. What they need is to have, like, a separate universe where they can start things over. And just like how I think DC's greatest weapon is their sense of legacy, you know, on the other side of that, you know, DC kind of has, you know, it's kind of played off. And Marvel's greatest weapon over DC is the fact that Marvel's more realistic. And I think that having some kind of ultimate all-star line for DC where they did the exact same thing. Like, let's see a teenage Bruce Wayne be Batman if he was living in a Gotham City in the year 2007, you know? Let's see Smallville. Like, Smallville's a great show most of the time. It does very well. And what is the concept? The concept is, what if Clark Kent, in the here and now, got his powers as a child? You know? And it's just like, it's It's so obvious.
Yeah, especially with the main books going back to the Silver Age so much, it'd be great to see these characters meeting for the first time in a modern day setting.
And just at this point, don't screw it up. You have the ability to start over, and you have people that are willing to be like, okay, that's fine. And, make a continuity. Make sure people are interacting, no multiverse, just have one thing on its own. And this All-Star line is just horrible. I mean, we both know that All-Star Batman and Robin's a joke. A lot of people like All-Star Superman. I think it's absolutely horrible.
Yeah.
And now we're getting All-Star Batgirl, All-Star Wonder Woman, who we saw in All-Star Batman Robin, who's a man-hater.
See, I think that's going to be just like All-Star Batman Robin. I'm going to buy it for the comedy aspect of it more than anything else. I mean, you just can't take those seriously.
I know. And every time I read anything of an ultimate line for Marvel, I'm just like, if DC did this, it would be so good. Because it's exactly what they need.
Yeah, that's the thing. That was the greatest disappointment for me for All-Star Batman and Robin, was seeing the original team put in a modern-day setting. Because really, we don't have any even remotely modern-day tales of Bruce Wayne and Dick Grayson as partners. There was Robin Year One, but even that was kind of put back in an old-timey aspect, but it was done well. But, in 2007, let's see Bruce and Dick team up. And I agree. I totally agree. They if it's not broken, don't try and fix it, Just right. Go ahead and copy Marvel.
Yeah, and, it's not like anyone's going to care. Just give your, give the people what you want. You can say that, but that's my number one. I'm thinking, I think you'll see most of your five. I don't think I'm going to see any of mine, basically.
that's optimistic. No, that was good, though. That was good.
Okay, at this point, every now and then, we're going to do some listener feedback if we have any questions. And we actually have one question from Matt in Louisiana. And Matt wants to know, first of all, he wants to know if we're DC-focused, Marvel-focused, or indie-focused. And I think the obvious answer to that is that I am more Marvel-focused, definitely. You are more DC-focused.
Right.
And I don't read a lot of indie books. I'm more of a mainstream kind of guy. But you read a couple, right?
Yeah, I've been reading more and more lately, actually.
Okay, but his main question is, what is the favorite trade that we are enjoying right now?
The one trade that I've just finished actually last night that, actually it's more like a graphic novel than a trade, but Blankets by Craig Thompson. It's an indie book that basically just talks about, it's an autobiographical book in a sense that it discusses kind of his first love, and it's kind of in an idealized fashion, but it really hits all the emotions that you feel when you're young and you start feeling these feelings for the first time, and he really kind of plays it off of a really strict kind of Christian upbringing and why he feels guilty about some of the feelings that he's feeling. And it was just really, it hit me in the gut. It was a great, great read. And I'm, everyone's going to usually recommend this book. But if you find it at your comic shop, I strongly suggest you go pick it up.
I don't really buy trades. I am a mainstream guy, and I'm a mainstream guy in everything I do, basically. Movies, music. I'm very, very boring and straightforward.
Yeah, that's just what you like, though. That's your taste.
Right, and it's not like, it's always about the image. I think a lot of indie people hate mainstream because of the image and everything. I'm kind of the opposite. I see a lot of people who just want to be indie, and they're avoiding the mainstream, and I'm just like, that's just dumb, My thing is that, I like what I get exposed to, and so I don't get exposed to a lot of indie things, and so I don't read them. The last trade I did buy, though, probably a couple of weeks ago, was Pride of Baghdad by Brian K. Vaughan, and that was pretty amazing. It's a story of lions who are in a zoo in Baghdad when it's bombed during Operation Iraqi Freedom, and the lions escape, and you kind of see them dealing with their life after they escape from the zoo. And it's a pretty in-your-face, exactly what's going on, exactly what Brian K. Vaughan is saying, and it's very powerful, and I was very, very impressed by that. Brian K. Vaughan's stuff is actually pretty good, and after that, actually, I went and bought the first trade of Why the Last Man, and so I was like, oh my gosh, I'm reading indie books, this is crazy. But, I can't deny it. I mean, good books are good books, so yeah. Those would be my trades.
Yeah, another more modern or more contemporary book, I guess, or not contemporary, but more DC-centric book that I would pick out. Though I picked up Green Lantern Rebirth again the other day after reading Sinestro Corps, and that book is great. That's another Geoff Johns and Ethan Van Sciver, and you will not regret it. It's got a lot of backstory, but you don't have to know it going in because you get filled in throughout the story. And so if you're ever curious about the Green Lantern books or the characters or anything like that, go out and buy that book. It's fantastic.
That's true, because Eric and I were both Kyle Rayner fans, so we did not want to see the return of Hal Jordan. But after Johns wrote that Rebirth, I was like, oh, okay, that's fine with me.
It was great.
It was really, really good.
Just good.
Also, I've been reading in trades. I don't like trades because I don't like reading comics in non-issue format. That's just my little nitpick. But I've missed issues of New X-Men Academy, and I've been going back and picking that up in trades. And I think that's probably the best book that no one's really buying right now. So I'd really, really recommend that. It has, like, the feel of the old New Mutants series in, like, the late 80s. And they just threw X-23 on the team, and so they're giving a little spice, and it's a great, great, great read.
Yeah, we could do this all day, basically.
Probably. Yeah. So, good question, Matt. We appreciate that.
Yeah, thanks for chiming in.
All right. Well, I guess that was this week. Also, we just got our new forum page up, so you can reach that through the link on our website, fanboystrikeback.com. And you can also go, it's actually on the Comic Geek Speak forum page, so definitely check that out, post there, let us know if you have any questions or comments about the podcast, your top fives, we'd love to hear that. And also, oh, go ahead, Eric.
Just going to say, yeah, just chime in with anything that you want to maybe hear on the podcast or any questions that you have. You can also email us at contact@fanboysstrikeback.com. Any questions, that's one way to get a hold of us. And we also have a MySpace page.
MySpace.com/thefanboysstrikeback.
That's right.
We're striking back against the man.
Damn right. We need friends. We need people to strike back with. We need an army. So
that's true.
Please come on there. Be our friend. We also have a Comic Space page.
Yep. ComicSpace.com/fanboystrikeback. And we still don't really know what Comic Space is, but find out with us.
It's there, and we're there too. So yeah, that's our week in comics this week. Thanks for listening to the show. We'll see you guys next week.
All right, later, guys.